The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just completed a sweep of the Tampa Bay Rays down in at the Trop, winning all three games of the series. They now stand at 26-24 and currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Not too shabby. Got a little bit of egg on my face because I picked a sweep the other way. I thought Tampa would sweep us. But doing pretty well. And you can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. You can find my baseball-only Facebook account at Terry Talks Sox if you don't happen to be on Twitter. Find us on Instagram. YouTube has been very busy for us with pre- and post-game shows. That's a separate crew. I do make occasional cameo appearances on that, but for the most part, a separate crew. And big upset in Tampa. The Red Sox hadn't won. They had won two out of the last 15 games at the Trop and hadn't won a series there since 2019. So very unlikely setting for an upset like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only is the Trop an absolute toilet of a stadium, but it's been a horror show for the Red Sox every time they go down there. They just never play well in that stadium. And for them to come away with a sweep, facing some pretty good pitching along the way as well. I mean, Tampa's lineup leaves a little bit to be desired, but that's still a team you're contending with, and you just leapfrog them for third place in your division now. So huge series for them, absolutely. And lots of praise to go around. We'll break it all down for you. We'll get our top five lists going. So let's not waste any time. Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. What do we got coming in at number five?
In the five spot, we are going to go with Seydon Rafaela, who hit a home run in game one off of Taj Bradley. Basically had a hit in every game of the series. Drove in a run tonight on a weird fly to the... it wasn't a fly ball. It was a base hit to the warning track, and it was kind of in the gap, and I thought the left fielder could get it, but for some reason the center fielder was dive-bombing in, and Grissom seemed confused because he should have advanced to third, and he didn't. It was just kind of a wonky hit, but one run came in on it, and it was a pretty good series, and he made his presence felt on the base paths, throughout the series. Lots of speed. When you can put Rafaela in the nine hole and then Duran in the one hole, as soon as one of them gets on, they're literally off to the races. Like, that's a bad spot for an opposing pitching staff to be, especially if Rafaela is on. And I mean, he'd been pretty quiet. I mean, the batting average had slipped below the Mendoza line. And so hopefully this is a spark and, for I don't want to say a breakout run. I don't want to jinx him. I don't want to set the expectations too high. But hopefully this is the start at least to, close out the month for him.
He was hitting the ball hard this series. I mean, even his outs were pretty loud outs. So he was driving the ball, you know, it's good to see. And he was going up against legit pitching, guys like Taj Bradley, guys like Zach Littell. So, you know, he wasn't exactly going up there against 4A bums. He was hitting the ball against some legit big league pitching. That single that he had, it should have been a double. It was a weird play. They broke it down pretty well in the broadcast that because Hamilton was attempting to steal third, he broke for third base. So Rosarena came in to cover a throw. So he moved in, he darted in from left field, and then Rafael hit it to the gap. So he had to kind of like double back. He couldn't get there in time. Grissom should have been at third. I think that's more an issue of either he couldn't read it well, or I don't know if that's because they're missing Andy Fox, their first base coach, their regular first base coach, who wasn't there this series. His son was graduating high school or college or something. So they had to fill in at the first base coach because Grissom tagged all the way back to first. So he either just got a horrible read on it or didn't get the proper coaching. But either way, that should have been a double for Rafael. It should have been another extra base hit for him. Look, the defense is going to be there. His glove's going to be there. I know that the quote-unquote metrics are bad on him at shortstop, but he's still a very good defender. We know he's a great defender in center field. If that bat starts to warm up, then it's going to be a huge boost for this lineup. And you mentioned it, the speed to bookend the lineup, him and, you know, at the 8 or 9 hole, and then Duran leading off. That's a nightmare for opposing teams. Both guys can steal bases at will. They can create havoc with their speed. So to see Rafaela picking it up with the bat has been a really, really positive development for the Red Sox. And we'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. You know, it's one series. He might go 0 for 12 this weekend. We don't know. He's still a young kid, still trying to figure it out. But it's good to see him have a good series, and it's good to see him look confident up there too. You know, he didn't look like his usual shaky self at the plate. He was putting good swings on pitches, and even when he was getting out, it was one of those, like, he hit the ball hard, he made good contact, and, you know, it's an out, it's an out. You're not going to get every single one, but that's okay. So I think Rafaela turning around with the bat could be huge for this lineup with the amount of guys they're missing, and with him kind of being one of your young stars. If he can start to turn around, even if he just hits, you know, 250, 260 down there, that's fine. That's all you need right now. His defense and his speed makes up for that. So it was great to see him kind of go off a little bit and hopefully, you know, rise that momentum going into the Milwaukee series.
Insanely, Rafaela actually leads the Boston Red Sox with runs batted in. You wouldn't think so because he just kind of flies under the radar there. He also doesn't have a ton of multi-hit games. I think he did have a two-hit game somewhere. No, he did not. All three games, he just had one hit. So he's been making them count in certain spots. Now, here's a trend that bothers me a little bit. The next three under him in terms of runs batted in are, and Rafaela has 26, by the way. Devers comes in behind him at 23. Duran has 21. Abreu has 20. Okay. So those are the next three big RBI guys. This is what needs work. Okay. Let's start with Abreu and then work our way back up to Rafaela. Abreu has 18 walks, Duran 19 walks, Devers 22 walks, Rafaela 6 walks. That's got to change. If that number goes up, the rest of them go up. I've been saying that all season long. So that's really all I want to see. I mean, if Rafaela in the next series only has one or two hits, but he draws 4 walks, that would be big for me.
Look at what that's done. Well, look what that's done for Abreu and his development. He's learned to be patient and take walks, and it makes him that much more dangerous of an at-bat. Same with Duran. We were labeling Duran a strikeout machine, you know, early in his career. He's kind of turned around a little bit. He'll still have the odd game where he strikes out 2 or 3 times and struggles, but being able to take walks is really valuable, especially for this lineup, because they don't have a ton of power in the middle of the order. They're not like the Yankees or the Dodgers who, we don't care. We don't need walks because we'll just hit 8 home runs a game. Like, the Red Sox need to get on base and they need to manufacture offense that way. It's a big reason why they won the series.
And the other thing, too, that we were just talking about as we started the Rafaela segment, drawing a walk could be huge because of the base running speed and the ability to steal. So I hope Alex Cora and Peter Fatse are preaching this to him as we go, because he's just really going to be that much more dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, if he can cut down on the strikeouts, draw a few more walks, get that on base up a little bit with his speed and with, you know, what they can do at the top of the order, this offense could really get going. And it's really the biggest thing that's stopping them from, you know, really pulling past 500, you know, getting winning streaks together, is just sometimes their offense sputters. So if they can fix that, then with the rotation, the way it's going, the bullpen's been solid, you know, sky's the limit. So speaking of that rotation, we'll move on to number four on our top five. And coming in at number four is going to be the former Ray himself, Cooper Criswell. Pitched a very good game on Tuesday, went 5 1/3, struck out 6, only gave up 2 runs, ended up throwing 79 pitches, which I think was more than the Red Sox were expecting or hoping for. He had a rough kind of first inning. The Rays were definitely super aggressive against him. They were first pitch swinging a lot. They obviously had a book on him, being a former teammate. So they were jumping right on him. He only gave up the 2 runs, and then he really settled down after that. I mean, he was, you know, getting out in front of hitters. He was going 0-1, 0-2 most of the way. You know, the 6 strikeouts was, you know, pretty impressive to see. He was keeping hitters off the base paths. And, you know, the Red Sox offense that day took a little bit longer to get going, so he didn't get the win. But he kept the Rays off the board the rest of the game and really kind of went deeper than I think the Red Sox were hoping for. I know it's only 5 1/3, but for a guy in Criswell who's really more of a swingman anyway, to get 79 pitches and 5 1/3, and for him to hold that lineup to just 2 runs, you know, that's really impressive. And I was not expecting much from Criswell when they acquired him. I thought he was just going to be another warm body, another guy who, you know, occasionally will give you some good outings, but for the most part, it's just going to get roughed up too much. But he's been super impressive. And honestly, he's a guy that even when everyone got healthy, obviously the Red Sox were like, we want to keep him around. And the Garrett Whitlock injury helps a lot with that because he's probably done for the year now. So I think Criswell has kind of solidified himself as that number 5 starter or that back end guy now. And he's going to be here for the remainder of the season. So super impressive outing from him. And you know what? You didn't give up really anything to get him. So get as much out of Cooper Criswell as you can. If you can get more outings like this, that's even better. Keep stretching him out. Keep letting him pitch into the 5th, 6th inning. That can really help this rotation a lot.
I think we actually just straight up signed him for like $1 million or $2 million, if I'm not mistaken. But what was impressive to me here was it was coming off of his worst start, which happened to be against Tampa last week. He only made it 3 2/3, gave up 4 hits, walked 2, struck out 2, gave up 3 earned. And like you said, I mean, it went sideways on him right away. In the first inning, I mean, he faced 7 batters and gave up a single immediately in the first at bat to Josh Lowe. Randy Arozarena hit a double, and then let's see, Isak Paredes drove them both in with a single. And Paredes is like, he doesn't get any glory whatsoever, but he's been quietly big time productive player for Tampa. Let me just pull his numbers up right here.
He's the best hitter on that team.
I would say so. I mean, yeah, 9 home runs, 28 runs batted in. That would be the most on the Red Sox, hitting .308 with a .395 on base. And that, what's his first name? I can pull it up here. Starts with a P. He hits around 5th in their order.
Palacios.
Richie Palacios. Yeah. Richie. Man, his numbers aren't really off the charts, but he hits the ball hard. And it wouldn't surprise me if he kind of you know, ascends to Isak Paredes type production. It's just crazy how Tampa seems to find these guys and develop them. I mean, they've developed some good hitting, like Josh Lau, Randy Arozarena. Rosarena is not having a good year, but I think he'll figure it out. Aranda has been, you know, kind of an up and comer, and you know, and then you got the guys we just discussed with Paredes and Palacios. So it's not just a pitching factory anymore. But anyway, so Criswell gets, you know, a rematch, and I was sure they were going to put up a 5 or 6 spot on him coming into this. I mean, why would they be fooled by him? They know nothing is coming at them at above 89 miles an hour, and they just had a fresh look at him, and it got off to the start, like I said, you know, 7 batters in that first inning, 2 runs went up. I just thought, oh, here we go. And he locked in after that. I mean, super efficient. Let's see, third inning, or second inning rather, it was 3-up, 3-down. 3-up, 3-down again in the third inning. Fourth inning, 3-up, 3-down. Again, super efficient. Finally, in the fifth inning, he walked their catcher, Alex Jackson. So that was the only other base runner he gave up until that final at-bat against Paredes. Gave up a single. Cora came out and got him. That was also the first time he's ever pitched into the sixth inning. So starting to get some length out of him. And I know the pitch count was kind of low, but that just kind of speaks to the efficiency that he gave them. So with Whitlock out, and we're going to be getting into him on the Clown Takes episode. So there'll be plenty of Whitlock talk on that episode that'll drop Friday morning. But like what I see out of Criswell, I'm not quite sure. I'm extremely worried about load management across this whole staff. The only two, I shouldn't say the whole staff. I think Crawford should be able to close out the year a lot stronger. I don't think he'll lose a ton of velo, you know, this time through. And I'm not so much worried about Bayo in terms of the load management. There could be other concerns. But we're not going to get into him this episode, but went 6 innings, which is nice. Had a sideways inning for 3 runs, but the 4 walks are a little bit concerning to me. So just a very somewhat shaky start for him. But just real quick, how many innings is the most Criswell has pitched in a year? I've almost got it. He's been in the league since 2021, but I think he's been a reliever for the most part.
That sounds right, yeah.
Okay, so what do you think the most innings he's pitched is?
In a single season?
In a single season.
Can't be more than 40 or 50.
Not even. He's already at the most right now at 34 and two-thirds. 33 innings, which was actually in 2023, was the last, was the most actually Criswell has ever pitched. And let's see, none of those were starts. So that was strictly out of the bullpen. So this is another guy. It's cute, and I'm still kind of skeptical. Our team's going to figure him out. Is he really going to survive in this league with no viable fastball? So I'm worried about that on one hand, and then on the other hand, how many innings can you get out of him? I mean, can he go 120? Hopefully you can get at least that. And what you really need is 150 to 160. So I don't know what the future looks like, but from a game-by-game standpoint, and that's how we're living and dying, I will take what we can get.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the long-term question on him is yet to be answered, so we won't know that until we get into, you know, late June, July. You know, once those innings start to creep up towards the 60s, 70s, assuming that he's still that number 5 guy there, then you really start to figure it out. But for the moment, he reminds me a lot of like a right-handed Wade Miley. just not super electric stuff. He's not going to blow you away, but he's super efficient. He works fast. And somehow you look at his numbers and you're like, this guy shouldn't be pitching this well, but he is. It doesn't make a ton of sense. But you know what? If that's what we get out of that, you know, number five spot in rotation, that's fine. That's completely fine. He's not a disaster. It's not the Garrett Richards year all over again. You've got a guy who, you know, even his bad outings aren't like atrocious. They're not super bad. So I'll take it, you know, ride that wave as long as you can.
Absolutely. And he's only 27. I was kind of curious about that, but we'll keep riding the wave. So I'm up next at number three. We're going to go with Jaron Duran for this one. Where is he on the season before I get into the game by game? Yeah, he's really having obviously he's having a great year, but hitting 270, his batting average is is on base is about 70 points above his batting average. And just a solid series all the way through. Had a hit in each game, hit a home run, a solo home run that was just demolished. I think it was the longest of his career, 426 feet, something like that, 111 off the bat. Drove in a run today in the finale. He also, I think one of those hits, it might have been game one, I think was a triple off of Taj Bradley. So, I used to rave about him, but it's almost the norm now. I mean, this is who he is. Can we say that at this point? This is the player that Jaron Duran is.
I think so. And, you know, the beauty of it is he's still making adjustments. Like they talked about on the broadcast, and now he's added this high leg kick so that he can sort of put his motion towards the pitcher and drive the ball even more. And what happens? He hits a monster home run to dead center, you know, in game two. So he's clearly still, or game one, sorry. So he's still working at it. And that's great. I mean, you want a guy who, even though he's playing well, he knows, you know, especially with all the outfield depth in the organization, my job is not completely safe here. So I need to make sure that I'm still, you know, giving my best effort every single game. And if I need to work on something, that I'm doing it. So I love to see that. He adds another triple to his tally, still leads all of baseball with 8 triples now. He's now, I believe, 14 away from the record, from tying Tris Speaker. I think it's 22 is the team record. So, you know, he's on pace to smash that record. His defense is still solid. He's showing a little bit of power now. He's, you know, we talked about the plate discipline. He's taking more walks. So he's really rounding into the quintessential perfect leadoff guy. And Red Sox have been lacking that for the last couple of years. And now you're at a point where I don't ever want to see Duran hitting anywhere else in the lineup other than number one. I think there was one other time this year where Cora tried to get Rafaela going and he put Rafaela in the leadoff spot and he dropped Duran in the lineup. And I hated that. And I think Duran went over that game or something. Like it was not a good game. So I hope Cora knows now that, like, no matter who's starting, righty or lefty, no matter what the circumstances, keep Duran in that number one spot. It's perfect for you. He's been a great leadoff guy. So just great to see him continue to build off of what he did last year. Because, you know, 2 years ago, we were like, oh, is this guy even a big leaguer? You know, can he even hack it at the big league level? And then has a breakout year last year in what was admittedly a very down season, but he was kind of a glimmer of hope there. And then to go through an offseason where your name is thrown around trade scenarios left and right. I mean, for a guy who has been open about, you know, his mental health struggles and all that, that couldn't have been easy. Because I think Duran likes it here. He wants to stay here. He didn't want to be shipped out to San Diego or something or somewhere else where he wasn't going to get the same amount of playing time. So for him to deal with all that and still come in prepared, you know, making the proper adjustments, I guess he's still working with Pedroia and guys like that to, you know, constantly tweak his batting stance and stuff like that. It's great to see. So I don't know what the long-term future holds for him with, you know, all the outfielders they've got coming up in the system and, you know, what's the future between him and Willy Abreu. There's already been speculation about that. I don't think that's a right now problem. I think at least for the 2024 season, there's your center fielder. There's your right fielder. It's Duran Abreu, and that's it. Obviously, Rafael will get some time out there as well. They'll put Duran in left, but especially with Yoshida out and with O'Neill being a guy who, you know, he's always going to get nicked up here and there, Jaron Duran should continue to play pretty much every day. And as long as he can hold up and, you know, doesn't get hurt, doesn't slow down too much, I have no problem with that because he's your perfect leadoff guy.
So on April 21st, so a little over a month ago, I pulled the crew on the percentage chance Duran gets traded. You were at 35%, which was the second highest. I was at 70%. And I don't know if I feel less strongly or more strongly he's going to get traded, but you look at this pipeline and it's all lefties, and we're going to be getting into another one here on the top five. I don't know, man. I mean, if a team comes forward with this massive offer, I don't know. I want a Jaron Duran. I'm not going to lie. My birthday is July 15th. Okay. Very close to the trade deadline. And if I'm going to get a jersey, I really want a Duran jersey. But I'll feel like an idiot if 2 weeks later he's playing for the Mariners, you know? It's like, so where are you at? Like, I still think it's a real possibility he could get peddled.
So the one thing working against him is his age. He was a late bloomer. He's going to be 28. And his game is, you know, predicated off of his speed. That's his number one best attribute, right, is his speed. So what happens when he hits age 30, age 31? Is he going to be as fast, right? Typically, guys tend to slow down. I think the only guy who continued to be a speed demon that late in his career was like Juan Pierre. And he's like, he was a rare exception, you know, and his bat started to go, you know, towards that part of his career. Now, what works in Duran's favor is that you've got what, still 5-6 years of team control? So, or something like that, maybe four.
No, you're right. So 2028 is the last season we have him if we ride it out. And he turns 32 in September of that season. So he'll hit the free agency market at 32 years old. And that's why there's like no urgency here for an extension. You may as well just ride it out. You're going to want to extend all these other guys. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's the ultimate sell high situation if you want to do it.
Yeah. So I think the years of team control really work in his favor because it makes no sense unless you get like, unless Atlanta offers you Spencer Strider, you know, it would have to be something like that where you just get a ridiculous no brainer offer where you go, oof, yeah, Duran's a really good player, but if we get this guy, it's franchise changing. It's franchise altering. That's the only point where it makes sense. So I said 35%, you know, what was it, April 21st, you said?
That yeah, point? A little over a month ago.
I would lower it now. I'd probably lower it down to 15, between 15 and 20%. I'm not going to put it at zero. You can never put it at zero, but it's definitely lower for me because I just think, yes, he's a little bit older than Abreu, and he'll always be older than Roman Anthony, Miguel Blaze, these other outfielders that you've got coming up. But, man, he's already, you know, proving that he's a big-time major league leadoff hitter, and he may not have even hit his ceiling yet. His ceiling may be another year from now. So I think it makes no sense to deal him. Again, as you said, there's no rush to even extend him. You've kind of, you know, I hate to put it this way, but you kind of got him over a barrel because he was such a late bloomer that, you know, you can just take him to arbitration every year and he'll still cost you just pennies. And he's your leadoff hitter who's leading the league in triples. It's the perfect situation for the Red Sox. I don't know why you would trade away a guy like that. Again, unless you got just an offer you absolutely can't refuse, like a Juan Soto type player in return. It would have to take something like that. If you're not getting that, then no, there's no reason to trade him.
I think it could be simply like a top pitching prospect and a top hitting prospect. That's what we gave up in the sale trade, essentially. We gave Moncada was the next coming, or at least that's what everyone thought at the time, myself included. And then Kopech was our, I don't know if he was a great pitching prospect, but he was the best one we had. So that's what we gave up. I think it could be something like that. And there's two things on my mind, and I've been kind of harping on this as, you know, we're still a ways from the trade deadline, over 60 days, but one of the key reasons I think they moved on from Bloom was he froze at the deadline and didn't acquire assets when it was pretty clear we weren't going to contend. And even if we snuck into the playoffs, how far were we going to go? So I think there will be a directive from ownership to acquire assets, like a hard directive. So if we're not looking like we're going to contend, I'm not saying Duran's definitely going to go, but you will see some guys get moved here. You know, we've mentioned Connor Wong in recent shows. You're hoping that Tyler O'Neill will do it, but, you know, he kind of came back in the St. Louis series 0-for-8 this series with 4 strikeouts, had the third game off. But so on one hand, you're probably going to have a directive from ownership here. But then on the other hand, the PR hit that could come from moving a guy like Duran, that's the only thing that gives me a little bit of pause. You're trading one of your more exciting players. I don't know. I would say I was at 70 a month ago. I'm still at least 50.
Yeah. And keep in mind, you know, the years of team control is very attractive. Him being able to hit leadoff in any lineup is very attractive, but teams will hold his age against him. So, you know, for fans out there like that are speculating, oh, what would a Kings ransom be for Jaren Duran? You're not going to be offered like Jackson Holiday for him. So, like, pump the brakes a little bit. Like, you're not going to get Ellie De La Cruz and Hunter Green in a package for Jaren Duran, right? You're probably looking at probably a top 10 prospect, but not like a number 2 or a number 3. Probably more like someone's number 6, number 7 prospect. Because again, the opposing team's going to look at it and go, I'm trading for a guy who's going to be 28. His wheels might fall off in 2 years. And then what kind of player is he? So that's another reason why I think I'd be skeptical about going into trade discussions with any team about Jaren Duran, because I think they're going to try and screw you over a little bit and give you one of their, you know, prospects they don't really believe in, even though they're rated highly. Like, you might get another team's Jeter Downs, who at one point was a top prospect here, but we all know he can't play. So I'd be skeptical of that too, because I do think that age thing is going to scare a lot of teams off.
You know who gives me Jeter Downs vibes? I just David thought Hamilton? Of this. Nope. Vaughn Grissom. Oof. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I'm like, geez, what a fleece job if this guy doesn't pan out. It's super early. And, you know, he did have, he drove in his first run in over a month. So we'll see if that sparks anything. The team I'm looking at here for trading Duran is the Seattle Mariners. That's a team that's all pitching, no offense. You know, like how the Rays used to be, how the Brewers have kind of been. And I don't think you can get Gilbert or Kirby from them. You might be able to get a Bryce Miller type guy. Brandon Wu, he must be injured. He's only made 3 starts. He's another guy that's kind of been on my radar. I think he was a rookie last season, but that's like a perfect dance partner, and there's a GM that loves to wheel and deal in that front office, so we'll see. But I think if 8 teams come calling, I think the Red Sox have a lot of leverage. and they're going to be able to get a package that they're comfortable with. I don't think there's a scenario we're going to get fleeced. Let's put it that way. But yeah, it's one thing that's interesting to watch. And if Durant's still here on, I don't know what day the trade deadline is. It's probably August, first few days of August. But I will get my Durant jersey a little later. But I've got terrible luck with jerseys. Benintendi changed his number on me. He came up as number 40, and I felt confident. I'm like, okay, well, Mookie's number 50, so Benintendi wants to be number 40. And it made sense. But then that offseason, ironically, same jersey number as Duran, 16. So, yeah, all right. I didn't think we'd spend... Or go ahead.
The last Red Sox jersey I got was Chris Sale's. So that worked out well. And it was the road gray with his name on the back, so it's not the home jersey. So I'm, you know, stuck with that, unfortunately.
He took number 51 in Atlanta. I don't know if 41 was taken, but yeah.
And just quickly on your Mariners point, I just pulled up their top 10 prospects. All 10 of them are position players. Oh. They have zero pitching in their pipeline, so I don't think they're going to give up one of their young starters anytime soon. But if they are willing to, you're right. That is a GM who likes to make big trades. Like every offseason, he's due for at least one. So
I think they could. I mean, they've got a hell of a 1-5 in whatever order you want to put them in. Kirby, Gilbert, Castillo, Miller, and then Wu, who, like I said, has only made 3 starts. So perhaps he's injured, but I think they, if anybody has depth on the major league roster, it's definitely them.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and you mentioned their 1-5. The Red Sox have a pretty solid number 1 right now, I would say. And he comes in at number 2 on our top 5. It's Tanner Houck. Once again, not much of a shock. If the Red Sox are going to win a series, Tanner Houck's probably going to be involved if he's on the mound there. Another great start from him. 7 innings, 5 Ks, 94 pitches, just, you know, pretty efficient, went pretty deep into the game. His ERA is now down to 1.94. That puts him 3rd in the American League. He's only behind Skubal in Detroit and Seth Lugo in Kansas City, oddly enough, who's having a phenomenal year off of that free agency contract. But Tanner Houck is your ace now. There's no doubt about it. Whatever Andrew Bailey has done with him, it has worked. He continues to go out there, go up against good lineups, continues to dominate. This wasn't even like, I hate to say it this way, but it's like, wasn't even one of his more like stellar outings, because he just had the 5 strikeouts and, you know, that was just kind of it. He only gave up 3 hits, but you know, usually he's punching out 7, 8, 9 guys. He's only punched out 5, but that's okay. Kept the Rays off the board. You know, Red Sox offense was behind him. They did their job. So, it's been great. I mean, you finally have once again developed, you know, a true, you know, top line starting pitcher, and hopefully it lasts. You know, hopefully whatever Bailey and Breslow have tapped into is here to stay. And obviously you hope that he stays healthy, because you mentioned the workload for this pitching staff. Tanner Houck is on pace to throw the most innings he's ever thrown by a long stretch in his career. Now, he's 27 years old, so if he's ever going to do it, now's a good time. He's in his prime. He should be at his healthiest, so it should be okay. But that is obviously a concern, because there's been a lot of pitching injuries around baseball. A lot of guys just, you know, going under the knife, you know, for too much work, or, you know, throwing the ball too hard, you know, too much torque on the elbow. So hopefully Houck stays healthy. But if he does, I mean, we're not just talking, you know, is he an all-star or is he your new ace? We're talking, is he going to win the Cy Young this year? I mean, he's now officially in the race. It's him, Skubal, Lugo. You know, there's only a couple of other guys, I think, that are really, you know, in that conversation right now. You know, Cole Reagans will be in there. We talked about him on our preview show, but he's in that discussion now. So, you know, every 5 days, Tanner Houck's taking the ball, you feel pretty good about a Red Sox win. And his win-loss record doesn't reflect it, because the offense has taken so long to get going. But if this is kind of a sign that the bottom of the lineup is waking up and the top of the lineup is waking up and they can kind of string together four or five runs a game, then, you know, he'll be a, you know, double digit winner, you know, by the end of the year. He'll win 10 plus games, maybe 15, somewhere around there. So he's just been fantastic. It was another great start for him. Again, just hope for good health and hope that, you know, everything that they've tapped into stays, because you've now got your ace, and that's huge.
Yeah, I'm not going to harp on the load management. I mean, it's kind of the elephant in the room. 106 innings is the most he's ever pitched at the major league level. 119 is the most he's ever pitched in a year at any level, which I think was single A, like I said. But you got 7 innings out of him again. That puts him, I think that puts him at what, 65 innings on the year, if I'm not mistaken. So he's already there. I mean, he's on pace, literally on pace for over 200. I doubt it's going to happen, but that's where he's at right now. But getting to the Tampa series, scoreless in the outing, walked one, struck out 5. The only thing in the Cy Young race that gives me a little bit of pause is his strikeouts really haven't been there. He hasn't had a double digit strikeout performance in the month of May. He'll make one more start before the end of the month, but in April he had, well, he only had one in April. He had a 10 strikeout performance against Oakland, but he had 9 against Cleveland. That was the Maddux game. Then he had 9 against the Cubs and has really just kind of grinded. He's gotten a ton of ground balls, I'll give him that. So the defense behind him has been turning double plays and he's been somewhat efficient because of that, but we'll see. If there's a Cy Young front runner, though, isn't it still Skubal in Detroit?
Oh, probably. Yeah, because his strikeout numbers are insane. So I think he's gotten the wins as well. Like, I think that Skubal is probably the leader in the clubhouse right now. Lugo, I don't think Lugo's a big strikeout guy. His ERA is super low, but I don't think he pitched that many innings either. So really it's Skubal and then probably Hauk is behind him.
Yeah, so Cole Reagans has the most in the American League at 76. Skubal right behind him at 72. Oh, actually, you know what? Flaherty and Skubal are both tied. That's interesting. Skubal's, I forget Flaherty was even with the Tigers, but Skubal's ERA is a full run and a half lower than Flaherty. Skubal is 2.25, so we'll see. I'd be shocked if Jack Flaherty pitches a full season. I wanted nothing to do with him. Let's see, where is Hauk? He's not even 62, so he ranks 18th. He's tied with Logan Gilbert of the Mariners. And another guy that totally unrelated, I'm way off the tracks at this point, but a guy that's just been striking out tons of batters this year, and I think last year as well, Yusei Kikuchi, another guy I wanted nothing to do with, but Toronto seemed to figure it out. Toronto has a very good pitching program from what I can tell. Their starting pitching is never an issue. It's just the offense. I don't know why they can't get going with, you know, that infield that they have with Bichette and Guerrero. They have Springer in the outfield, who's been pretty solid and relatively healthy, surprisingly, for most of that. But getting back to Hauk, I guess the last thing I'll say on him is this is his third rematch. And what I mean by rematch was where he faced a team 2 starts in a row. The other two didn't go that well, and I wasn't expecting this one to go well, especially where they're such an elite on-base team. But he shut them down. Only two hits also, by the way, allowed three base runners in seven innings. Despite only five strikeouts, that's pretty dominant. That's a guy who's cruising right now. So we'll see who's going to start on the All-Star team, because that's a conversation that Tanner Houck is in as well. So these next, 6 weeks before the All-Star game could be pretty interesting.
I mean, he should be a starter on the All-Star team. Red Sox fans, you know, show up and actually vote for their guys. They actually should have a few All-Stars, if you think about it. But we all know how it goes. It's a popularity contest more than anything else. So I wouldn't be surprised if Gerrit Cole is your leading vote getter, and he's not even healthy enough to start. That's how that stupid thing usually goes. So we'll see how that, you know, we'll see if he gets there. I think he will. So going from a Cy Young contender to a Rookie of the Year contender, to bring us home, Terry, who is number one on the top five?
That is going to be Willier Abreu, who I think was only hitting 170 coming into the series, had been having a quiet month, was 4-for-12, and drove in runs in every game. Home run tonight that was just demolished as well. And that kind of, you know, gave the Red Sox a little bit of breathing room. But I think he was leading coming into the series as well, despite the slow start to the month, leading all rookies in hits in the American League. And I'm a big Willier guy. If he can figure it out, especially against lefties, and Cora doesn't sit him against lefties, I think he's 4-for-21 on the season against lefties. I'll double check on that, but he's a guy I want in there. If it's a lefty, I don't care. Maybe don't hit him second behind Duran necessarily, but I want to see what this guy can do. Mookie Betts came out of nowhere, and I'm not saying Willier Abreu is going to be a generational talent, but he could be a perennial all-star. He could go to Cooperstown. I know I'm jumping the gun big time, but I think he's got a really high ceiling is what I'm trying to say. I know he's a bona fide major leaguer at that point. He's checked that box off. He's going to be on a roster for the next several years. And the dude, as Jeremy would say, is an electric factory. He can impact you in the batter's box. Tonight, at some point in the middle part of the game, I forget who the hitter was. It might have been Paredes. No, it was Palacios, actually. Hit like a line drive laser beam up the gap. Abreu threw it off the wall and then threw a laser beam himself into second. And can just gun people down. He's got a Hunter Renfroe type arm. So you talk about Jaron Duran impacting the game in several different ways. So does Abreu. He might not hit as many triples. He's got base stealing capability, probably won't steal as many bags as Duran, but man, there's a lot of things he can do. And I didn't mention his name earlier because I knew we were going to get to him. But when it's a righty starter, you got Rafael hitting ninth, you got Duran hitting first, you got Abreu hitting second. Name me three guys in a row that are that fast around the base pass. And if I'm not mistaken, did he hit? No, it was only a double, actually. I think he put up the first run. That might have been game one. Yeah, it was against Taj Bradley. And Bradley struck out 8 out of the first 9 batters. And I was thinking, oh, here we go. You know, I mean, fresh off of a embarrassing series against the Cardinals. And then the top of the lineup came up. Duran hits a triple. And then Abreu gets us on the board by basically pulling one down the right field line and gets a double out of it. So just puts together a really good at-bat, draws a ton of walks, you know, like I was complaining about with Rafaela. And I'm a big Abreu guy.
I am too. And if he just had maybe a little more speed and a little more base stealing ability, he'd be on his way to being a five-tool player. I mean, he can hit for average. He slumped a little bit, obviously, going into this series, but he can hit for average, get on base. He can hit for power, hit a bomb in game three of this series. And he's a terrific outfielder. He's a +7 defensive run saved in right field.
Wow.
I mean, it's not what I was expecting out of him. I know he was like a decent athlete, but his defense has taken a huge jump this season. And playing Fenway right field is an absolute bear of a challenge. And he's done fantastic at it. He has a cannon of an arm, and he has good plate discipline. Like you said, he takes walks. So yeah, I think he's up there for rookie of the year. Now, you know, he's going up against guys like that Mason Miller out there in Oakland. And, you know, he's got some stiff competition, but he's at least in the top five right now. I mean, if you look at any betting site, he's up there. So, again, a guy that makes you feel good about, you know, getting rid of Alex Verdugo. It was finally time to do that. It cleared the way for Abreu to, you know, be able to slide into the lineup every day. And, again, it's going to make it difficult for the Red Sox at some point to figure out who they want in that outfield and who's going to have to go, because I'm not sure even they were expecting Abreu to be this effective. And, you know, everyone keeps saying, oh, just wait for Roman Anthony. Just wait for Miguel Blaze. Just wait, just wait. You know, Rafael is going to be in center field. Just wait. It's going, well, okay. But right now you've got two guys out there, Duran and Abreu, who are killing it. I mean, last I checked, Roman Anthony's hitting what, .239 in double A. I mean, I'm okay with just keeping Abreu out there, and I'm not exactly in a rush to call up Roman Anthony. So he's making it, you know, for what a lot of people were saying was going to be like a developmental transitional year. He's making it the opposite, because he's just playing so damn good that, you know, he's helping the Red Sox win games. And now all of a sudden they're two games over .500 in third place, you know, even with all their injuries and all the guys missing from their lineup. So it's just been great to see his development as well. And he's super young, 23, 24 years old. So, you know, has a lot of growing still to do. He's probably not even in his power prime years. I mean, and he's a big dude. So, you know, if he puts on like a little more muscle and kind of, you know, gets a little bit stronger, you know, by 25, 26, I mean, is there 30 home run potential in there? Probably. With that swing and with his approach, I don't see why not. He's no different than Casas in that way. Casas is definitely a little bigger than him, but, you know, Abreu can get there. So he's just a great athlete, kind of deceptive. Like, you look at him and it's like you don't think that he's going to be a superb athlete or a superb outfielder, but he is, you know, and his defense is great. He's taking walks. You can put him at the front of your lineup and he's not going to hurt you there. So just, again, another great development from not just this series, but the first half of the season in general. You know, again, you're missing Yoshida. O'Neill, you know, is hurt. He's having to sit games out. You're missing a bunch of guys. Willy Abreu has stepped up. You know, there's a lot put on him. And again, playing Fenway right field every day, to be a +7 defensive run saved at that position. He's already got two outfield assists on the year. You're right. He's as good as Hunter Renfro was out there, except he's a little bit better, because I think he's a little bit smarter than Hunter Renfro was. So Willy Abreu has been a huge, huge part of this team's early success. And I hope that they're not taking him for granted. I hope that, you know, he continues to get everyday playing time. Like you said, I don't care if there's a tough lefty on the mound. You know, and I know, we all know Alex Cora. He is so tempted whenever there's a tough lefty to sit all of his left-handed hitters. But I'm pleading with Alex Cora, do not sit Abreu against lefties. Let him develop. Let him face those left-handers. Let him show you what he can do. Because I think his approach is good enough. I think he's got the baseball IQ to handle it. And if he can turn into that kind of guy that plays every single day, you know, all the better for the Red Sox.
I was just trying to find his prospect rankings to see where he was with the Astros, but he wasn't showing up, and I know he was in there somewhere. I'll just do one last thing here, but Astros top prospects. Well, it's brought me to 2024. So I want to say he was like their number 15th or 16th ranked prospect, and Valdez was somewhere in that neighborhood as well.
I want to say he was like number 16 in their organization when the trade happened. Yeah.
So it really was a steal. Like when I complain about the Red Sox not getting the Randy Arozarenas from other people's farms, this is probably it. Like I think they finally did it. And, you know, it's kind of curious that they targeted a lefty outfielder, but, you know, it worked out. And I'm a huge fan. So here's the question. Abreu is 24 years old. I think he turns 25 next month, June 24th, actually. He'll be 25 years old. Duran turns 28 this September. If you have to move one, which one are you moving? It's tough. They're both lefties, and that's what makes it a relevant question. And you got Roman Anthony, who's coming up, who's a lefty.
It does. It makes it really hard. If I have to pick between the two, I hate to say it, I'm moving Duran.
Yeah.
Only because of his age. It's just the age. That's what does it. If Duran was 24 years old, I might pick Abreu to go, or I might just flip a coin at that point, because Duran gives you speed and gives you top of the order stuff that Abreu doesn't, but Abreu gives you power and gives you better defense. So it's really just, you know, what do you prefer? What's more important to this Red Sox lineup going forward? Just because Duran's older, and I think, you know, a guy who predicates his game on speed, by the time he gets past 30, that's not going to be the case. I would trade Duran, but that is, man, that's a hell of a Sophie's choice. That's really tough.
I just wish one or two of these guys was a righty, and then all is well with the world. But Bloom had a lefty fetish, I swear to God.
Yeah, Pedroia should teach Duran how to switch hit, because then he'll stay here forever. I mean, forget about it. It's, you know, it'd be a no-brainer. But you're right. I mean, the fact that they're both lefties, at some point, if, again, big if, and we'll get into this more on the Clown Takes show, but if Roman Anthony is always cracked up to be, then yeah, you will have a decision to make. But obviously, we don't know that part yet. So.
Yeah, maybe I'll just get an Abreu jersey. I don't know how much sense it really makes to move him. But, man, this next couple of months are going to be fascinating to see where we're at record-wise, if we're definitely going to be sellers. And you don't want to trade any of these guys in a perfect world, but you need to acquire assets. You need to, you know, you need to get some pitching into the farm system. I mean, Richard Fitz is our top prospect, and he's only projected to be a number four starter. Perhaps Bailey can, you know, elevate him to a number three, and if he's off the charts, a number two. But so need some pitching depth, but I guess that'll do it.
Yeah. Or, you know, the amateur draft is coming up in early July. Maybe draft a pitcher for once. I don't know. There's a thought. I mean, they'll take a shortstop. I know they'll take a shortstop and everyone will praise it. But I don't know. Maybe try taking a pitcher. Who knows? You know, might be worth a shot instead of just trading away all your good players for pitching. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. So we will wrap on that. Keep an eye out for our Milwaukee Brewers series prediction show that will come your way for your morning commutes, and keep an eye out for our Clown Takes show. We've alluded to it several times. Got some good ones for you this week. That'll be available Friday morning for you guys. So that'll get you going for the weekend. So with that, have a great weekend, everyone. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.